We bring in the bench coach of the San Francisco Giants, Ron Wotus. Well, August baseball, a one-game lead. You've been down this stretch so many times before. 46, is it time to start thinking about it, or we got a long way to go?
Well, it's definitely time to start playing better, and we know that since the second half. We haven't played the way we want to, and no, it's time to get after it. I mean, there is. You look at both sides of it. There is a lot of baseball left. You know, we could you know, scuffle a little bit and fall back, and we got the Dodgers nine times. There's a lot of games left, but that's not the way you want to do it. The way you want to do it is get back on track, play good baseball, and hopefully have a little bit of a cushion going into the games against the Dodgers. So, but it is the time of year. You know, the break is in the past. That it's time to man up, let's say. Everybody's tired, right? It's been a long year. Guys got bumps and bruises. And it's time every day to prepare and try to win that game.
Well, you had quite a week. You managed, unfortunately for Bruce Bochy, he was not feeling well on that Monday against the Marlins. And you managed one of the more incredible games of the year, not only for coming back and winning the game and all the things that went on, but how about Brandon Crawford?
Yeah.
Can you do that every time you manage? Can you?
That would be nice. I know Boach jokingly said something to Craw. He goes, "How come you don't hit like that for me?" And what a performance. What a performance. You know, at the point in time, I didn't realize he had six hits. I know he was having a wonderful night. And he's a guy we always want at the plate in those situations. And, you know, on Sunday, 2 days later, he won the game with the home run. And what a clutch hitter he's been for us. He's a guy that wants to be up in that situation. And that's quite an accomplishment. That is unbelievable. What a day.
Yeah, so what do you think as this thing was unfolding? You had a lot of things going on in that game. There was a lot going on. And to win at 8-7 and was it 14 innings or something? That was pretty good. That was a good game.
You know, you get a chance to manage a game. I'd much rather go 8-1 with the 7-run lead, but there was a lot going on. We used everybody in the pen except for Javi Lopez. He was our lone guy there. We had to make some unusual decisions, probably the biggest one, obviously, on the road, using your closer for two innings. And then Contos had to close out the game. So some things were out of the ordinary in that game, but great win for us. We really needed it. The guys, I really appreciated their effort, the way they got after it and how hard they played, because that was a game that we could have hung our head and quit very easily. We left 17 or 18 on base. We had opportunities to win that game over and over again. We couldn't push the run across, but they persevered.
Last night, as they opened up today, I thought Bumgarner sort of, well, we'll talk about how that inning unfolded, but I thought he didn't want much to do with Scope at some point. I said, all right, that's enough of him. I'm not going to let him beat me. And then he brought Chris Davis up, and boy, it was good morning, good afternoon, good night, and he just put him away. I thought that was the save of the game.
Yeah, you're right. That was a big moment in the game. You know, you're sitting there on the side, and you're watching, and you're thinking, you know, who's he going to attack here? But he did the right thing. I mean, the guy that you wanted is Davis. He's an all-or-nothing guy, but he strikes out an awful lot. And, you know, that's what you're looking for in that situation. If you have a dangerous hitter ahead of him, I'd much rather go for the strikeout than have someone who puts the ball in play, maybe bloops a ball in, ties the game. But they have a tough lineup to navigate. They really do, because you start putting people on base with them, and anybody in that lineup can hit the ball out of the ballpark. Before you know it, it's a three runs on the board. So tremendous job by Bum. I thought that was one of his best performances of the year, because how important it is for us to win games. And his stuff, I thought his command was outstanding. He really attacked the hitters. He pitched in well. Just a fabulous performance by Bum.
Yeah, I thought it was, and you need it. And you know this. You know, we look at some of the stats. When you score first, 40-18. How do you explain that? I mean, if it was that easy, get a guy on, bunt him over, and do whatever you can to get a run in the first inning.
Right. It really isn't that easy. And, you know, you can look to things as, you know, getting an early lead obviously takes the pressure off of the pitcher, your starting pitcher. Yeah. You know, we've been in stretches here in the big leagues where you're having a hard time scoring runs. And when it's 0-0 or you're down by the run, the pitcher pitches feeling he cannot give up a run. And sometimes that can lead to a big inning. That can lead to not pitching as effectively. So when a pitcher gets a little bit of a cushion, there's no question he can attack the zone. He doesn't have to worry about giving up that one run. So he's going to pitch differently there. That's probably the most glaring thing. I think the second part of that is it opens up the game for you offensively.
Yeah.
Base running. You're more apt to try to steal a base. You're more apt to hit and run. Take it to the other team when you have the lead. Most managers you see in this league, when they're losing, they're not going to try to press an out on the bases. They're not going to hit and run. So it does give you some flexibility to take it to the other club when you have a lead.
Yeah, it's a great point. You know, Pagan is continuing. You know, he is an impact player. He really has become an impact offensive player. And the guys pointed out on the air last night, and I agree wholeheartedly, he's as good as anybody right now getting to the left field line and holding people, and he threw somebody out at second base, which was huge in the 1-0 game of Sabarja's game.
Right.
Talk about Pagan a little bit, and defensively on that play to go to the line. What has to happen on that play?
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of good ones over the years. We've had one of the best in the game at doing it here was Barry Bonds.
Correct.
You know, especially early in his career and even late in his career, he had that play down. He'd go to the line, spin, and throw a perfect strike to second base. You know, I think the biggest thing is that really has impressed me about Angel and his left field play. It's not that easy to go from a center fielder to left field. You know, every outfielder will tell you that the balls come off the bat a lot different on the corner outfield positions. It comes off different from a lefty or a righty than it does in center field. And you would think, well, you play center, that's the most difficult. But the way the ball comes off the bat, so it is quite an adjustment to go from center to the corner. And to your point, he's handled it very, very well. Two things for me. He's played extremely shallow. I think he's challenged more in left field. And he also has learned to shade the line towards the left field line. And Bonds was another guy that notoriously did that for us. Sometimes to a fault, you look up and he's hugging that line. And the reason being, with a left-handed hitter up, you know, if he hits the ball and the ball's heading to the gap, the ball's going to come back to you. So the ball is slicing towards the line on a lefty. So if you stay straight and you're running for that ball and it keeps slicing away for you, it's a more difficult play. And if you notice, Angel will play to the line, and he's able to still get the ball in the gap because it comes back to you. So I think he's positioned himself well in at times, and also playing the line. And when you're over there a little bit, it makes it easier to make that play. You get to the ball quicker and hold the guy to a single opposed to a double on that base hit down the line.
Well, that's the professor. All right, early morning for you. That's a very good lesson on how to play left field, and that the ball does come back to you. That's a very good point. He can. The best I ever saw was Ricky Henderson. And again, like Bonds, you know, that speed. But Ricky Henderson, boy, he would get over on that line. You could not go to second base on Ricky Henderson. Yeah. And also a left-handed thrower.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the speed aspect of it, which I didn't mention at all. But, you know, he runs extremely well. So, yeah, that makes a difference, too. You're shaded to the line. You get to the ball quick. And he's done a good job. He's done a good job over there.
All right. I was thinking of Eric Chavez, too, as you were talking, you know, because it's so critical for the third baseman not to let the ball go down the line if you can stop it. And Brooks Robinson was great at it. Now, I'm going to ask you some of your favorite third basemen, but Eric Chavez was one for me. And when he came up, Ron Washington had him, and Eric Chavez was afraid of the ball. He would not catch the ball. He would back up. It was well known. And Ron Washington, our dear friend, worked with him and made him into a Gold Glove third baseman. But I realized, I said to Eric, I said, you know what, I realized the ball never goes past you down the line. It never goes past you. And he said, well, I play very close to the line. Mm-hmm. That's what he did.
Yeah, he
hugged the bag.
Right.
And you couldn't hit the ball down the line on him, and he went to his left fairly well. But that was the key for a third baseman. I'll ask you that. Now, Nunez is, I'll jump ahead just a little bit. Nunez has played some very nice third base.
Right.
Turned some great double plays. Some rockets were hit at him. How do you teach dealing with the line for a third baseman? Maybe the best you've seen.
Well, you know, I view it a little differently. There's a lot of teams that do that. Obviously, there's situations in the game where you don't want a ball down the line. And it really goes off your pitcher on the mound where you should position. For example, Madison Bumgarner's pitching, and he's pitching in. He's throwing that cutter slider in on those right-handers. There's a lot of action at third base, and there's a lot of balls down the line, just like Hardy hit one down the line last night. So you're going to play closer to the line. But typically, most right-handed pitchers pitch away for the majority. Okay, they're going to throw their fastball down and away. So conversely, you want to have the third baseman off the line. And this is what I believe is a philosophy. We want to take away the middle of the field. I'm not talking about late in the game where a ball down the line is a leadoff double. Now they can bunt them over and score without a hit. I'm talking about a general philosophy. More balls go between third and short than they do down the line. Okay. So it's always a struggle for some players to get comfortable playing off the line. So if you position yourself off the line, righty's pitching away. Now when they come in or they throw a pitch that can be pulled, whether it's a breaking ball or a changeup, you take a step to the line. And the greatest we ever had here at playing off the line was David Bell.
Mm.
David Bell played so far off the third baseline, it would scare you when the right-hander was up. And you know who did it yesterday for them was Machado. I don't know if you noticed during the game, we hit that ball, that nice play he made to his backhand and threw to second. They almost turned two. He was way off the line and still got there. But it takes a special third baseman to have the confidence to play off that line. And honestly, I mean, most importantly, you got to use good judgment to who's pitching on the mound and can he locate the ball. You got a sinker baller who's sinking the ball on the righties, you're not going to try to do that. But think about most right-handed hitters, pitchers, they're going to try to throw the ball down and away.
Does the third baseman know what pitch is coming? How does he get the sign? Now, the second baseman, shortstop, and they do the thing. You'll tell me how they do it. I mean, you're not giving any secrets away.
No. Everybody
but does
the
third baseman know what's going on?
Yeah, he does. It's standard in the game. You know, the shortstop will give a little or say his name, some kind of little verbal signal to let the third baseman know when an off-speed pitch is coming. Uh-huh. Shortstop does it to third base. Second baseman does it to first base, because that's how you need to play defense. You know, you set a defense by the hitter's tendency, but you got to look at the pitcher on the mound. What's his stuff today? How's he pitching the hitter? And what pitch he's throwing? So you have to move in counts. One of our skippers we had in the past was big on that, and that was Felipe Alou. And Felipe, not just in the infield, but in the outfield. You know, if you're shaded a guy to the right center because you're keeping the ball away, and all of a sudden you get, 2-0 or 3-1 on the guy, you're going to move over to the pull side because the guy's not trying to get a little base hit. He's trying to drive the ball. So you have to play counts. You have to move in the at-bat and according to what pitch is thrown or what the count is.
Do you have to do that with the outfielders, or do they figure it out?
Roberto positions the outfielders. These are things that I'm sure he talks to these guys about. I've seen it here over the years. Years ago when I worked with the outfielders on positioning before Roberto, we did those things, and we talked about it quite a bit. You know, Stan Javier was one guy that always liked it. You see two different philosophies with the outfield, in my opinion. You see teams that play on the pull side all the time, early in the count. And then when the hitter gets to two strikes, they adjust to the opposite field, thinking that the hitter is going to try to put the ball in play. Stan Javier did it just the opposite. He'd always play on the opposite side in general. You know, if it was a big pull hitter, he wouldn't do that. On the opposite side in center field. So if it's a right-handed hitter, he shaded a little to right center. Then when the pitcher fell behind in the count, and it was more of a situation where the hitter's trying to pull it, he would go to the pull side and did it that way. So those are two ways that you most commonly see outfielders position themselves.
Boy, very, Professor, you're in good gear this morning. Very good. I hope Mark Gardner's listening to this, and your peers are listening. This is very good.
Well, we haven't seen Gardy walk by
yet. No, the donuts are here, so probably he'll be coming by fairly shortly. Ron Wood is with us, the bench coach of the Giants. I want to go back to Nunez for a second. We don't know much about him. You're getting to see him right now. On the trip, there were a couple of rockets hit at this guy, and he turned the double play. He made a heck of a play last night. I had a star on a 5-3 last night that he made as well. What do you think of Nunez?
Well, he's a talented player. I mean, I remember him back with the Yankees years ago when Jeter was still playing. He came up as a top prospect, and he came up as a shortstop. And they had Jeter over there, and I remember he played third base for the Yankees. They were trying to find a spot for him. He's played left field. He's been moved all around, but he has the skills to be a shortstop. So anytime you take a player of that caliber with those defensive skills and put him at third base, it's going to be a plus. He's got good hands. He's got an above-average arm. He's got good range, good quickness. And he's a guy that has the ability to be an outstanding defender. Outstanding. Mm-hmm. And he wants to be. You know, he's told me he'd love to win a gold glove someday. It'll take a lot of discipline on his part. And he's moved around a lot. It's not easy playing all these different positions. So right now he's playing third, and I think the more he plays it, the more comfortable he's going to get.
How about his arm? He has a little, it's not the classic arm. When he lets it go, I think Aurelio Rodriguez, and you probably don't remember him for the Tigers, and he played in the late 60s, early 70s. He would get the ball, and probably Duane remembers him, and he would throw 110 miles an hour to first base, like a Sean Dunston from third.
Right.
And this guy kind of reminds me of that. He whips that ball over there, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's got a very good arm. The thing that stands out to me, obviously, working with him, he throws from every angle imaginable.
Yes.
He'll throw over the top. He likes to throw sidearm. You saw the game last night, and looking at his tape from this year on all his plays, the majority of his throws are sidearm. And that's one thing that we've always preached here is find your best arm angle. On a routine play, throw the ball from that position. Because if you throw from every angle on every routine ball, you just have more margin for error. The name of this game is consistency, whether you're hitting, pitching, or fielding. So where are you going to be most consistent? Keep it the same all the time, opposed to just being athletic with no, fundamental foundation. So I'm getting to learn him more, getting to watch him more, but he likes to throw underneath.
Which is okay, I guess, if that's his most comfortable spot.
If that's his most comfortable spot, no question about it. And if he's good at it, then that's fine. If he's not, then we'll have to make an adjustment.
Very good. All right. Last night, and I don't know what happened, but there was sort of, I don't want to say an argument, but Buck Showalter came out and eventually led to replay in that sixth inning where they were icing Bumgarner. It was like, icing the kicker here. Left him out on the mound, and then he walked the guy in the double, and that's when the trouble started. I don't know the issues of what was going on. I realize Adam Jones was up. It looked like he got hit. But from a managerial standpoint or from your standpoint on the bench, what were the issues that were going on in that play?
Well, when he bunted the ball, it looked like we recorded an out. And, in the video review, there was some question whether the ball hit him in the finger. Jones acted like the ball hit him in his finger. And as I was on the phone with Sean Dunston to ask about the play, because Showalter came out immediately, he said it's hard to tell whether it hit his finger. But when the ball was bunted, it also hit him in the leg. Our video guys thought the ball hit him on the leg in the box and then went fair. That's probably what Buck was arguing. And that's not a reviewable call.
That's correct.
But somehow, Buck got the umpires to go take a look at it. Not on whether that ball hit him, but I think he got the umpires to look whether the ball hit him on the bunt, that it hit his finger. Because if the guy got hit, you could ask to review that, but not the foul ball bunting into him.
Yeah.
So, nonetheless, we don't know, what they said eventually, but Buck was unhappy with the call. He came back out, worked out perfect for us. He bunted the ball fair, and we recorded the out. Because the way I understand the rule, if the ball did hit him in the finger and the ball was bunted fair, when you get hit, it's a strike because he offered at it, just like a swing. You see guys swing at a pitch on strike three, and they get hit, but they swung, the batter's out. Because they swung the bat.
Okay.
Well, if it's not strike three, you swing and you the ball hits you and you put it in play, it's a strike and it's a dead ball. So maybe that's what Buck was arguing there. The ball hit him in the finger. It should be a strike and a dead ball, but I'm not sure.
Ah, very good. Buck's funny, isn't he? I mean, come on. I mean, it's just I like the way he moves around. I like I don't know when, well, you know, you match wits with a guy. You know, you guys on the bench, and I always remember Mike Socha with Art Howe. He loved to manage against Mike Socha. Yeah. There was every inning something was going on.
Yeah.
You get that feeling with this guy?
Well, there's no question. You know, Buck's known to be one of the smarter managers in the game, and there's a lot of gamesmanship. I mean, you said it right there. He went out to discuss a play with the umpires, which certainly he had a valid point. But icing Bum, I mean, we're getting upset on the other side that they're taking so long to get to go look at the review or to get this play over with, because Bum's standing on the mound. And he knows Bum's dealing, you know. He wants to ice him. He wants to do this. So Buck is one of the few managers in the game that still, you know, implements a lot of gamesmanship into his game. And he's always been one of the guys that knows the rule book as good as anybody in the game. And that's always been his reputation. But he likes to tinker with the game and show his knowledge of the game.
Yeah, he's evolved, though, I will tell you that, over the years. And you know him. You go back so far with him. I remember at one point when he first, I think, became manager of maybe the Diamondbacks, he put a clock in the dressing room that looked like something out of NASA. There was a countdown. They thought they were going to take off, you right. know, before things would happen. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah, well, that's camp time. You hear a lot of stories about that. You know, Jim Leland was another one that had, you know, spring training had camp time. You know, everything, you got all this work to get in, and he wanted all the clocks synchronized so nobody's late. And then when you go out to do your work, if you got 15 minutes for the fundamental, when 15 minutes up, I don't care if all the pitchers went through the play, 15 minutes up, it's done. If you didn't get to go, too bad, we're going to the next station, because there's a golf game to play at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So that's how they run camp time. It makes a lot of sense. You know, you sit there, oh, this guy wants one more swing. No, your time's up. Let's move to the next station, get to work, and shoot, we have 8 months of this.
Do you
so
do
we
that?
Don't have to mess around.
Do you do that?
No, we're a little more lenient. You know, we soften a little bit. We're not as strict with that. Plus, it's, you know, our complex, you got to move around and all that. Yeah. You can't be right to the second. You know, that's not our style.
Not our style. Not the way we do it. All right. Great having Ron Wotus with us. We'll take a break. We'll talk a little bit about some experiments that are going on. John Shea wrote a terrific article about it in the Chronicle today, of getting a pitcher to deliver the ball within 20 seconds of receiving it. And the batter's got to be in the box within 5 seconds of that 20 seconds. When you get down to 5 seconds, he better be there, or they're going to call a strike. Is that any way realistic for the major leagues? They're trying it in the minor leagues. We'll talk to Woe about it right after this. All right, nice to have everybody back here talking with Ron Wotus a little bit. Hey, the Pirates are coming in. Ryan Vogelsong tomorrow night. Woe, what do you think of that?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be great to see Ryan, and I'm sure he's going to get you know, a great ovation, and deservedly so. He's done so much for our organization. Of course, he had the scare this year with the line drive, or getting hit with the pitch in the face, and he had to go through surgery. He's fought his way back from that, and that's the type of guy Ryan is. He's persevered his whole career, and it's going to be good to see him, you know, off the mound. It'll be good to see
him. Yeah, it'll be great. Today you can't talk to him. Tomorrow, you know, he'll be he'll be off the charts. But maybe by Tuesday, maybe we can talk to him by Tuesday.
That's right. That's right. You won't be able to get a word. You won't be able to get close to him.
No, forget it. No, yeah. They're going to bring him in packed in ice tomorrow. It'll be great. I mean, it's going to be a big moment for the season to see him on the hill tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's going to be good. So I understand, you know, in quotes, you guys are juicing in the clubhouse now. Well, what's that all about?
Yeah. Well, Jeff Head, head of our, you know, sports science department, is really stepping up his game and doing everything he can to keep these guys healthy, keep them on the field, whether it's with, you know, shakes with the vitamins that they need to replenish themselves. In the latest edition, he got a juicer, which, you know, people out there that are health nuts know how important all the vitamins are, and beets and carrots and all those things. And he's got a neat little machine that you don't have to do any of the work. You buy the packets, you just stick it in there, hit a button, and here comes the juice. So I tell you, my energy level's been through the roof since I've been juicing.
Now, there's certain things you have before the game and after the game, right?
Well, that's what he says. I mean, I can't tell the difference, but obviously the reds, you know, promote blood flow, and the greens are calming. So Just get yourself a cup of juice, and you can go which way you want to go.
Well, baseball is juicing again. See?
Yeah, we have to be careful with
that.
Yes,
I understand. In quotes. I said in quotes. You like beets? Are you a beet guy?
You know what? They're okay. I'll have an occasional beet salad, but I do like the Caesar most of the time. And how could you not like the wedge? I mean, the wedge is a great invention.
All right. Borscht. Are you a borscht guy?
You know what? I'm not even sure I know what borscht is.
It is beets, beet soup.
Oh, it's beet soup.
Yeah, a little cold borscht with some sour cream. It's a big hit.
Well,
you got to go to Miami Beach. We'll take you to one of the delis in Miami Beach.
Well, I can understand them wanting something cold in Miami Beach, so that makes a lot of sense.
Well, what was Miami like for you? Well, we know you managed that one game.
Yeah. Well, it's typical. You know, they had a lot of rain. It was overcast, so that, you know, that sun wasn't bearing down on us, you know, during the day, which was kind of nice. And we avoided the Zika, which was another big plus.
Did you do anything?
You know what? I asked them at the hotel, you know, when I went out for a walk and stuff about it. And, you know, at the resort we stayed at, they spray twice a day for the mosquitoes. There were neighborhoods not far from us, or not far from downtown Miami, that were having all the outbreaks. And I watched a lot of it on the news, just to, you know, and that's what consumed the news down there, is Zika. It's a big deal. And it did put a damper on the nightlife in some of these towns. People weren't going out. They have the airplanes flying over with
really?
The pesticides.
Really?
So it is a big deal.
Wow. All right. Ron Wotus with us. All right. We talked a little bit before we took our break about timing in baseball. Now baseball is trying to get this 20-second clock. And I think, isn't there a clock in existence now? Pitcher gets the ball, he's got to deliver within 20 seconds of getting the ball?
Yeah, you know, I don't know what the time frame is, but it was a couple years ago they talked about this same thing. And I remember we had pitchers, and I think Santiago Casilla was one. They wanted them on the mound throwing a pitch in a certain time frame. And I can't remember. We'd get memos on our pitchers that took too long in between pitches. You know, you got to get on and throw it. I don't know what happened with that. You know, it kind of never was really totally enforced, and I think it went by the wayside. So I guess with the new commissioner now, it sounds like they want to bring that back. So I don't know if that rule's in existence still to some degree. Obviously, it's not enforced.
Yeah.
But they're trying to bring that back and see if it'll work in the big league.
Well, yeah, they do it in the minor leagues. And Eddie Montague, as I said, John Shea wrote a good column about it on page 2 of the Sporting Green today. And Eddie says, I guess in the minor leagues they're doing it, and I guess it's been successful.
Well, in the minor leagues, everything will be successful because these poor guys have no money to begin with to endure the fines or anything that goes along with it. Now, it's not fines in this, right? They could call a strike on the batter if he's not in the batter's box. But it's much easier to implement in the minor leagues than it would be here. You know, I'm all for speeding up the game. And, you know, I don't know if the 20 seconds is the right number or not. You know, everybody enjoys the game. I'll say this. Everybody enjoys the game when the pitcher gets the ball, gets on the mound, and attacks the hitter. I mean, the infielders like it better. The guys on the bench, the flow of the game is a lot better. What happens, though, there's always points in the game where you need to collect your thoughts. You need to take a little extra time. And that's where all these rules really start to hinder the performance of the player or maybe go a little bit too far. But in general, I think it's a good thought if they can do it to where it doesn't affect those moments. I think it would be a positive thing for the game.
Wade Miley, who pitches today, is one of the fastest in that article that John had. I think he gets rid of the ball in the least amount of time. So you better be ready. Hitter better be ready.
And everybody loves that. I mean, they really do. You could think as long as you played the game, one of the first things I learned in playing the game is, one, you jog on and off the field. Right, you don't walk to your position. You hustle on and off, and the tempo of the game. I mean, the pitching coaches I had in the minor leagues, that was one of the most important aspects of the game, was their tempo. Let's go. Keep the defense on their toes. Have them ready to play. And when you play behind a pitcher that does that, you are engaged in the game. The guy that walks around, you know, De La Rosa comes to mind with Colorado. I mean, you got guys yelling from the dugout every game at this guy. Let's go, let's go. So if they can clean up some of that, I think it's a good thing.
Boy, you bring up meal money, and in the minor leagues, Jim Palmer brought it up with us yesterday. He said he was in Aberdeen, and they got $3 a day.
Wow.
And he had an 85-cent breakfast. They try to find lunch all you can eat, and then chili and crackers after the game. What about you in the minor leagues? When you played, what kind of meal money did you get?
Yeah. You know, I think it was about $8 a day. It might have
really?
Went up to
that's
11
not bad.
Or 12. Yeah, that's not too bad. You know, you can have one meal for that. I don't know if you can get three. Of course, you had to pay clubhouse dues. They weren't all that much, and they shouldn't have been, because all you had was peanut butter and jelly. We like to call it the Texas League steak sandwich. It was a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So,
very good. Oh, boy. Another thing that came up in my mind yesterday, and I was watching base running this week, and just for the whole season, a lot of guys get tossed out, and you and I have talked about it. Between first and second, there's been a hit to right field, center field, throw comes to the plate. The guy gets the hit, and he's going to second, he gets thrown out. My question is this: who makes the call to send him? Is the runner on his own? Because, in other words, the theory is, look, I want to get caught. I want the run to score, so I want him to think about me and cut the ball off and get me. But who makes that decision? Is it the runner or the coach? How does that work?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. You know, first and foremost, I think any decision, you know, on the field as a base runner should be made by the player. That's first and foremost. The best base runners in the game instinctively know when to go, when not to go. They've done their preparation in their mind, whether they hit the ball, knowing the scoreboard, the situation, who's on second. You know, if I hit it hard, is it going to be a close play at the plate? And at every base, they're supposed to do that. There's very few times that you really need the coach. You know, one, for example, is if you're on first base and the ball hit down the right field line, mm-hmm. You know, does the runner come to third or not? The third base coach is going to help you with that. But the good base runners, even on that play, know what they want to do. They'll look at the right fielder, see where he's playing. They'll know the arm of the right fielder, and that ball will be hit, and they may even take a peek, but they already know where the ball's hit, the speed of the ball, the outfielder's arm, whether they're going to, in the scoreboard, is there one out, no outs, if they're going to take a chance to go. So, to your question, it's on the base runner, first
okay.
and foremost, but I will say that the base coaches will help them with that. And, you know, sometimes you're more adamant about, no, 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 stay here, or go, go, go. Because you'll have, you know, a lot of times as a third base coach when I was out there, and I'm sure Roberto does this with Bill Hayes, if there was, a man on second base and it was a big run with two outs, mm-hmm. I'd see where the outfield's playing, and I would look at the first base coach and say, I'm going to send this guy. So send, if it's going to be close, letting him know, I'm going to send him, I'm not holding him up. So if it's going to be close, you know, send that batter runner to second so they do cut the ball.
Yeah, great point. That's the professor. Very good. No, you're very good today. We've covered a lot of subjects today. This is pretty good.
Oh, you always bring out the best in people.
Well, we got three weekends in a row here. We're home for a lot here. We got the
That's
Mets
right.
next week, and you got Jay Bruce again this week. How about that?
Yeah, well, that's not a good thing. But you know what? It's a game of adjustments. So we'll get him this time. You know, he's one of the few guys, it seems like every time he comes to this park, he hits one out of here as if, you know, it's not a tall order. And
no.
It really is something. This is not just this year, but he's gotten us in the past.
Yeah, it'd be interesting with him. Matt Duffy, one of your favorite pupils now in Tampa Bay. We had him on last Sunday, and we played this yesterday. It was a lot of fun. When we had him on last Sunday, I said, when are you going to play again? He says, Friday night. And I said, well, that's A-Rod's, you know, farewell game in Yankee Stadium, and it's going to be wild. And I said, how about this? You get the last ground ball that A-Rod hits, you throw him out, you'll be on TV for the rest of your life. Sure enough, Friday night. Last ground ball A-Rod hits to Duffy. He throws him out, and that's the end of A-Rod's career.
No kidding. Now, I heard that story, and that you said that to him, and we were watching the game in the clubhouse, so couldn't wait to see his debut.
Yeah.
On that Friday night, I got to see him make one play on a slow roller, but I didn't know that happened. So he did. Have you heard from Duff? Did you text him?
Yeah, he loved it.
That's great. That's great. Well, you're like Kreskin. You can see into the future.
What'd you say, Justin? Yeah, go ahead. You want to hear it? Here's the cut. Go ahead.
You said
You said you'd be in New York on Friday. That's the last game. If you're playing the Yankees, not the Mets, that's the last game for A-Rod as he's retiring. And his last game will be next Friday night at Yankee Stadium. Maybe he'll hit you a ground ball. You throw him out for his last out.
Yeah, maybe it'll be the first ground ball I get at this rate. But that would be cool.
So he goes back towards the batter circle, drops his stuff, and gets ready to come to the plate for the fourth time. He had an RBI double in the first, grounded to short, and struck out against Chris Archer tonight. So Ryan Garten, rookie right-hander, faces a man 22 years in this league. And now you really might see the flashbulbs go throughout the ballpark. Rays are shifting three men to the left side. And Garten's first one to him. Grounded into the shift. Here's Duffy on the high hop. His long throw to first in time.
Oh, that's your pupil. How do you like that?
That's fantastic. Good.
Isn't that funny?
And it's great to see him back playing, but that really is something that you called that. And
come on, he was up. We said, you know, you're going to get the last ground ball and you'll be on TV forever.
Yeah.
He loved it. He said it was, he texted me, he said it was a crazy night with all the flash bulbs and everybody. He said that's the first time he's ever been in Yankee Stadium.
That was the first time?
Yeah, because
really.
He was injured. George Contos told me that. He said, I think that's Duffy's first time. And
wow.
And it was. So your thought of Duffy, I mean, he's no longer here, but you worked a lot with him, and he's now playing short. What do you think of that?
Yeah. Well, you know what? He has the skills to be a shortstop. He came up as a shortstop. Obviously, we have a pretty good one here in Brandon Crawford, and I think he's going to be fine over there in Tampa. You know, we're going to miss him. I mean, anytime you develop a player in your own organization and he comes to the big leagues, and, you know, and Duff's one of those guys. He's very likable, just not an outstanding ball player, but a good person. Yeah. And when you get those guys in your system, everybody, just not me as a major league coach, but the minor league coaches and the guys that have worked with him, you hate to see him go, such a quality guy. But, you know, it's the business of baseball. We got a great pitcher in Matt Moore. So I'm happy for Duff to see that he's back on the field and playing, you know, with that Achilles. So hopefully he can hold up and have himself a great career.
Well, now he's a trivia question.
Yeah, he is a trivia question. Yeah.
How about that?
That's something.
He seemed to like it. It was good. Hey, well, great to have you here today. It's Cueto on the hill today and goes against Wade Miley. And I know you haven't looked everything up yet, but the Orioles seem to, that's one team that seems to hit Cueto. So he's going to have to be gyrating and spinning and doing all his things today. Who knows what he's going to do today?
Yeah, well, you know, that's the thing about baseball. There's so much statistics and, you know, matchups, and I look at those matchups every day in the game. And I think back to a game with Dusty Baker. You know, we're looking at the matchups, and there was a guy, was it Lee, the first baseman? There was two players. Anyways, one guy was 0 for 17, and the other guy was, you know, 8 for 12 off Mesa, our closer. So Dusty looks at the matchup. We look at it. It's a no-brainer, right? Walk the guy who's 8 for 12 or whatever it was, and pitch the guy that's 0 for 17. Well, you do it, and that guy that's 0 for 7 gets a hit. So yeah. I guess he was due to get a hit off of him. So I guess the point is Johnny, you know, he studies well, and I'm sure John will make an adjustment if he's got anybody in this lineup that he's had a tough time with. But so I expect him to pitch a good game for us.
Well, he was consulting yesterday with Gaylord Perry.
Okay.
No, I'm only kidding. I'm only kidding. No, he didn't get the Vaseline.
We don't want that.
I'm only kidding. Hey, have a great day today, and I'll see you during the week, and we'll see you next Sunday.
All right, Marty.
All right, that's great. That was a great session. The bench coach of the Giants, Ron Wotus. More coming up right here. AT&T Park, we've got baseball today. We've set it up for you. Orioles and Giants, this rubber match of this three-game series right here on the Sports Leader.